For October the 2nd, 2015, we talk about the Mega Man Legends PSN release, Dead Core, and we ask you about awkward video game moments. Welcome to the 122nd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Thank you so much for being understanding about our lapse last week. I will take full responsibility for it. I saw fit to go to a concert instead of do a podcast. So if you are kind enough to have come back to us, then we are lucky enough to be back here for you. How's everybody?
How was it? I feel like we need a report to make it worth the while.
It was good. It's the Eagles of Death Metal, so it's essentially children's music for people around the age of 30 who like it, just ironically, you know, dancey songs about the devil. it's an offshoot of the Queens of the Stone Age, and yeah, it was a good time.
How is that different from like all death metal?
Well, it's not death metal at all. It's more like it's like the Rolling Stones meets like Canned Heat.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was like right down the street at this awesome theater I'd never really gotten a chance to go to, called the 20th Century Theater. It's like right within walking distance of my house. Yeah. Which makes it a prime candidate for DuckCon if that ever happens.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Are there hotels nearby?
There are like plenty down in Rookwood and stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that was a good time. I got to, and because it was within walking distance, I was able to drink. So that was also good.
Bonus, yeah.
And very cool. I promptly got sick over this past weekend, and that's why I'm sounding extra gravelly today. So
extra sugar bony today.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, it was good. I'm happy to be back. I miss this, and people said, oh, we missed the show. It's, you know, nothing makes you feel missed like being away. Which is a B-side off of a Sugar Bun album. Parentheses, nothing makes you feel missed, and then like going away. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. All roads lead to Sugar Bun.
Damn it! Now I'm going to be writing that song.
I suppose. Oh, we need to get somebody who knows music to do that. But no, Dennis, you were in paradise.
I was in the Dominican Republic, and it was beautiful.
Nice. The night before you left for paradise, you came over and like, hey, can I borrow a Danganronpa?
Yeah, we just kind of shit on your door and be like, hey, you got the goods?
Are you drunk enough for me to steal this?
That was only too deep, so I had to put up a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll be talking about that later in the episode.
Yeah.
So I won't spoil it, but yeah, I had a surprising amount of time to play video games while in paradise, because this is our first vacation leaving the kiddo at home, which I think it was terrifying leading up to it. And then the second that we actually had dropped him off and were away, it's like, oh, this is nice. I don't know what I was worried about.
Out of sight, out of mind.
That's right. That's right. We like FaceTimed with him one of the days, mm-hmm. And he just kind of stared at the screen like, I know you guys from somewhere. It's the weirdest thing. Like,
well, babies operate mostly on smell. So
yeah, yeah. So it was a good time. But yeah, so without a baby, I had plenty of time to just kind of derp around, and found out that this resort in you know, this kind of, I call it like a second world country. It's not too bad there, but has way better internet than I do. So I you know, was able to like actually stream and have a solid stream while I was there, which I cannot do while I'm at home.
Yeah, you were getting like 4.5 up or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah. And so I need to call Time Warner Cable and be like, look, in the Dominican Republic,
yeah,
where I was not allowed to drink the tap water, I had blazing fast internet. Come on, stop holding out.
Well, you can't drink the tap water because the internet lines are so overloaded with high pressure that it's actually leaking into the groundwater.
That's right. So you just drink straight information there.
Yeah.
Remember, America, network neutrality is a threat to freedom.
Jesus.
So yeah, that,
no, I'm
that
sad.
Was me over the past 2 weeks. Although I guess I'm very fortunate to be standing in for Jala because she is she's been amazing. She's been my saving grace.
Yeah.
she's been my saving grace on more than one occasion. It's always fun to have her.
Yeah.
So yeah, she'll be back in the rotation at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. Whenever, wherever one of us. Oh yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I remember you did that exact joke during episode 100. Yeah. So
she did that exact joke.
Yeah. That's funny. Oh, now I know. Now we know my process. I just vaguely remember something that somebody said before. Oh well. But it is time for us to move into the show. We got the usual roundup for you. We got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. So let's get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video game news. I'm going to get mine out of the way real quick because it's going to be very short. It's going to live up to one interpretation of the name of the segment. Something I thought was never going to happen. Finally did. We had a little bit of hope built up when Sony decided to re-release The Misadventures of Tron Bon, the kind of Mega Man Legends minigame spinoff kind of thing, here a couple months ago. We're never going to get Mega Man Legends because of, just these crazy copyrighted trademarked images that they have in there. It's a real, just a wet fart, right? Well, no, turns out today, as we record this, Mega Man Legends is available on PSN for the princely sum of $9.99, making my copy of Mega Man Legends effectively worthless.
Hey,
sorry about you.
Oh well, no, I want more people to be able to play this because like this thing being readily available was one of the major factors standing in the way of us doing it for WoF. Now that it's here, well, you gotta make hay while the sun's shining. I'm making no promises about when, but it's definitely back to the short list.
But definitely tomorrow.
Check your feed, people. I just recorded a solo episode based on my recollections.
You get an episode, yeah.
Look under your chair. There I am.
How did you know a chair?
But because they're not able to avoid any kind of weirdness with this stuff, though, it's not available on the PSP because of quote complications, according to the release, and also it is not on PS4 because what the fuck are you doing, Sony?
Yeah. So the one image of Mega Man that is heading this article doesn't look like the standard Mega Man fare. And I don't know if that's because it's old game art and all the old game art kind of took off in any direction from what the game actually looked like, or if it's because Mega Man Legends is actually kind of a zany offshoot that doesn't stick to the core gameplay of the Mega
Man. Yeah, like Mega Man Legends is really cool because it's this kind of open world's the wrong word, like the wrong word for it, but like action RPG. It's the first real 3D Mega Man game that I can think of that was ever put out. Somebody will come in and say, "Well, actually," but no, like, and it's got kind of this wacky 3D aesthetic, wacky kind of like I guess anime a little bit. But it's great. It's super endearing. It's one of the most charming games I can think of, honestly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it does veer away from both the regular Mega Man in that it's not as like stylized as that, and it's not as like gritty as the Mega Man X series is. So it's kind of its own thing.
Cool.
As a side note, nothing can hold a candle to the old Mega Man cover arts.
Well, yeah. Although the cover art for Mega Man Legends is fucking awful.
It's just a headshot.
Yeah, no, it is a terrible 3D model that shows up nowhere in the game. Yeah, it is real special. I think what we're looking at in this article is any number of the nicely drawn, very charming, beautiful hand-drawn art. But no, they decided not to do that because they don't like good things, I guess. Yeah. Oh, well. So that's my story. That is downloading. I guess I paused the download so I would have good audio quality. But it'll be downloading here shortly. So Dennis, how about you?
Sure. My story is about the sequel to The Stanley Parable, which
that would imply that The Stanley Parable actually had anything to approach a coherent thought or a plot.
So yeah, and I shouldn't necessarily describe this as a sequel. And what I was going to say is this is either, you know, we'll see if it can follow up or, you know, gain redemption from the first game, depending on if you are David or literally anyone else.
Yeah. I like to think that each of us has like the one game that nobody else on the I guess that's a little bit of a reverse dishonor because we all like the Stanley Parable, whereas, or at least Ben, you haven't played the Stanley Parable, have you?
Have not played it yet.
Have not. Okay, sorry. But it's a little bit my dishonor thing where I love it and I have no idea where all of you are coming from.
No, so yeah, it's coming from, I guess, the co-creator Davey Redden, and it's under the same kind of developer label as the Stanley Parable. Not sure yet if it has any direct connections to the Stanley Parable, but it is described as, oh, where'd it go? A narrative first-person game, and that's about all they've said.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they're able to take it and do all the crazy, cool, 3D space stuff, at the very least.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that this time it'll have narrative.
Come on.
It is a narrative game that is no promise of narrative.
Yes, it is attempting narrative. Huh.
I don't know. But anyway, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, that looks cool. I'll definitely check it out, especially if it is as digestible as the Stanley Parable was.
Mm-hmm. I still have to play the demo for the Stanley Parable.
Oh, yeah. Fix that right away. It sucks because it's
actually a separate thing.
No, I think that it might still be Windows only.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, which makes no sense at all.
No, it doesn't. Weird.
Yeah, let me see here. Yes, that is the... No, actually, yep. I don't know what I'm saying here. I can't see the availability because I own the full game, so. Let's see here. David, how about you?
Sure. So apparently, this morning? Is this, still this morning? Yes. Sorry.
We're recording earlier than we have in years.
you know.
Okay, go ahead.
So apparently this morning, the Call of Duty Twitter account changed its name to Current Events Ag.
the person got hurt when he was typing that.
Ag!
No, that's Kathy. That's Kathy from the comic strip, Kathy.
Wow. Okay. And kind of set up like their main image and stuff like that to make them look like a news site, and then proceeded to start posting fake news articles or news tweets about how apparently there was some sort of like military something or another happening in Singapore, and the government had declared martial law and had established a quarantine zone, and just various other things that you might not want to convince people were happening.
Trying to get some of that sweet let's see, your 83-year-old War of the Worlds action happening.
Sure.
Yeah.
Huh. So I imagine that these tweets have to do with events in the game.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Huh. Yeah, that's a little, there. I don't know. I don't mean to be, like, clutching my pearls here, but that's, it's a bit misguided, it seems.
Yeah, I just like the idea of you having pearls, Cole.
Well, no, I just keep them in a box. People keep trying to get them, so I have to clutch them. Yeah.
I don't know, like, what's their Twitter handle? Call of Duty. That's visible on every single thing that's tweeted.
True, I suppose, but that doesn't stop. I mean, you've seen those like the that guy who whenever there's some kind of like controversy makes up like a like for Doritos or Target or whatever, creates a lookalike a page or whatever account, and people write in saying, "I hate that you did this," and then he responds back in a witty way, and it gets shared on BuzzFeed. Like, people don't really pay attention; they just want to be angry at something.
Yeah, which I would categorize the reaction to this a bit in that category.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I feel like on the other hand, I think there's a legitimate possibility of people taking this seriously, missing that, being less computer savvy, something like that.
Yeah.
If they had created a specific account that like actually reflected current events ag or whatever, and then Call of Duty retweeted that, that might have been worse.
Oh yeah. Look, guys, it's coming true. Yeah.
Not necessarily like anyone who was legitimately fooled and freaked out about that.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's something that, I mean, I'm not necessarily, I'm generally not pro outrage.
Yeah.
In general, but I'd say I think it's pretty understandable how, you know, how people could, you know, how a lot of people could miss that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know how, like, how big of a problem it is. Like, oh, nobody's finger is hovering over the button and they were waiting for Call of Duty to confirm that it's time to start global thermonuclear war. Sure. But, you know, this is a campaign that had a possibility of making somebody's day worse through panic.
Right, exactly.
So that's a little bit of a bummer. Dennis, as kind of the person here who knows the most about marketing and social media kind of stuff, like, is this a tactic that people are using? Like, do you see them being able to get any kind of juice off of this?
Yeah, I would be very surprised if anyone went in saying, hey, we're going to actually fool people. Mm-hmm. It was probably more just, you know, not realizing that people would take it seriously than an intentional attempt. By my guess, that's just based on my experience. The interesting point in the article that you linked to was that really the tweets did not do much to actually tell you anything about the game,
right?
Which that then, you know, okay, so you pissed people off, and there wasn't any redeeming quality to it. Like, I haven't seen the actual tweets, but we know now it's in Singapore and you didn't before or something. I have no idea.
I feel like a Call of Duty game will have plot is actually a pretty big news story.
Well, I mean, aside from the what is it, the 360 and PS3 versions, which are just the multiplayer.
Oh yeah,
I don't know. I would argue Black Ops was the only one that had anything approaching a worthwhile plot. But
Ben, do you want to?
I mean, I thought Modern Warfare 2's plot was fine. It just was not front and center. It's like the polar opposite of any Naughty Dog game, where it's like the plot's just in the background.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I don't know. I mean, this is a far cry. Far cry. No, this is a far cry from like what Acclaim used to do with like getting people to change their like name their firstborn son Turok or whatever. It's far from the grossest thing, I suppose. So therefore, it's perfectly acceptable.
So I was trying to remember, what was the one like Splinter Cell publicity stunt where someone had a gun?
Oh, some random dude showed up outside a cafe with like
that was
a gun,
like a fucking like New Zealand or something like that.
Yeah, maybe not New Zealand. Poland?
Maybe. Someplace where people generally don't have guns.
Yeah, I was going to say, someplace with much more gun control than America, unless the guy's now dead.
Man.
Yeah.
To the archives. That one was worse.
Scale of things. Yeah, that was a total failure. This one, again, this one shows up to me more as misguided than like an attempt to deceive people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I doubt it was a attempt to deceive people, but you know, when has intent ever mattered to, you know, outrage?
If they got somebody to run into their bunker, then I guess it's okay. Oh man. just huddled in a bunker, opening up a can of beans.
Oh,
but hey, at least he has beans. Oh man. Ben, how about you?
That's more than the world has in his bean mind. Yeah. So the story that I have today is talking about a Hitman release date. So IO released details about it. It was delayed to March from December, but they kind of gave details about what's going to happen in their release. So at launch, for what was it, $35, you can buy the base game. They're calling it like the intro pack to the game. And that'll come with three different map packs and six campaigns and 800 targets.
Wow.
And yeah. So it seems like they're going the way of Metal Gear 5, where it seems like it's going to be a more open world type game. But then the missions will kind of be integrated into the open world. And that kind of jives with what they were trying to do in the last game, where they were trying to string missions together in a coherent world. But the locations that they're going to have at the intro pack is Paris, Sapienza, Italy, which I had not heard of before, and Marrakesh, Morocco. And then later on, every month, they're going to release a new map pack for 3 months. And so the next three are going to be Thailand, USA, and Japan. And it'll add new missions and new targets to it.
It's actually going to be the entirety of the USA.
Yep, the entire map. They didn't want to be upstaged by True Crime, Streets of LA, and Streets of New York. So, yeah, no. I don't know. I don't know what individual city they will zone in on for that. But if you pay $60 up front, you get the intro pack and you get the expansions over the next 3 months. So you're paying the same price that you would for a normal game. It's just that the game's being delivered over 3 to 4 months.
Oi.
That's so here's, concerning. Here's a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was, well, I was about to ask if you know, delaying it over 3 or 4 months, like you don't technically know if everything in a game is going to be good when you buy it. So I guess this is under the assumption that the reviewers will not have access to the full game at the launch.
Yeah, they'll only have access to the intro, I imagine.
Yeah, that's shitty.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, isn't that like episodic a little bit? Except it's being sold as a AAA full retail thing.
So I feel less bad about this than what Metal Gear's plan of having two different games, but one being like a 1 hour demo, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't have too many qualms with this.
Yeah. You know, they've obviously got to do something. Like AAA games have to, you know, good on them for trying, but I don't know. Like that just seems more confusing to me. I don't know if it's because I'm dim or what, but
so what do you mean they've got to do something?
Well, no, but I just, you know, AAA games, you know, sales are weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers are, especially for like the entrenched franchises and stuff. Like I don't know, like. You saw how quickly like Hitman Absolution dropped down to like $7, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
it obviously did well enough to get some kind of to get some kind of sequel, but you know, like the pricing structure, people are getting less willing to pay the $60 up front, or they're waiting for sales, like, you know, like I do. You know, I feel like I'm kind of spinning my tires here, but like a little bit of experimentation feels warranted, especially when, you know, I don't know, maybe this is forward looking, like this is a major console release that kind of acknowledges the fact that their primary market might not be in physical retail.
Yeah, I feel like if they want to innovate, like a good place to start would be better games, though.
It's easier like, to change the business model around it.
Yeah.
I wonder if it is the type of thing where the devs will actually be working on the later, you know, pieces of the game after the release of the original part. Like if they finished it and they're just sitting on it until it releases, then it's an interesting idea to say, hey, they could take like feedback or, you know, find the problems in the first part of the release and kind of fix it in later quote unquote levels as the game rolls out.
That's what, I mean, that's essentially a Telltale model.
Sure.
Yeah.
I suppose, I think it also might matter, you know, do they gouge people that don't go all in to start with to a dramatic degree?
So they have to pay, I think, $5 more if they buy both of them individually.
Okay, so that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
I think so too. Because also, if you're somebody who's like on a budget, if you just want to like try it out, you know, then that way you don't have to do the full committal.
Yeah.
Huh. I'll be curious about it. It looks like a cool game. I mean,
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you all a question. It is the listener participation section of the show. I'm still working some of the cobwebs out of the gears of my metaphors.
Are those the cobwebs?
David,
are you eating sun chips?
What?
Are you eating sun chips?
Oh, I'm sorry. Candy corn.
David, you can't do that.
Sorry?
It's literally the loudest sound.
I'm sorry, I'm not used to having a microphone. I'm used to having a headset.
I know. All our progress.
I know that forbidden corn is the sweetest. But okay, that's too funny not to keep in. I'm gonna have to ask you to refrain. I'm sorry.
No, God, we saw at Jungle Gyms the other day.
Sorry about that.
That's fine.
Candy corn flavored cotton candy.
What?
Yeah. If candy isn't named twice, that might be a little much.
Isn't candy corn just wax and sugar?
And isn't cotton candy just
sugar? Sure.
Yeah.
And hair.
That's how they make it. Yep.
As a side note, candy corn in pancakes is amazing.
What? Ooh,
I could see that.
Huh.
What if you don't like candy corn?
Get out.
So you'll find no purchase. This is not a home to you.
I was just wondering if it would be a reversal or not, you know.
I've reached the age where the candy pumpkins start to get a bit much.
Mm.
That's how I'll give you that.
Candy apple, far worse than a caramel apple. Anyway, it's Halloween time, folks. Halloween has extended for all of October. No. So this is where we ask you a question.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
That's what we're here for. But people who are like, oh, they're not going to get to my question because of the candy corn. No, it's fine. I'm going to start the timer. Don't worry.
We're going to see how light on our feet our audience is. Go right ahead.
Yeah, let's see here. No, we're just timing how much you pay attention to us. But Dennis, what is the question we ask the nice people?
The question suggested by Eric from the Slack is about the most cringeworthy moments in video games. So, you know, what are those moments that you get to in the video game or design choices or themes, and you're just like, yeah, I'm glad no one's watching over my shoulder right now. This is a little awkward, a little embarrassing. It, you know, video games are growing up as a medium, and I think that this kind of comes part and parcel with it. So it's fun to reflect on.
Yeah. So I'm going to get us started with Joshua, who writes in saying, I like the chosen image for this post, which is of one of the D.Va sections from Final Fantasy X-2, though I have to admit that enjoying that scene just a little. What I can say, the music was kind of catchy. Don't judge me. I think the forced laugh scene in Final Fantasy X is the most cringeworthy I can think of at the moment. Actually, any scene with Tidus whining in that game would be a good choice. Love that game, but damn, he was hard to like. So that forced laughing scene, that actually, it was, I hate to hide behind the, it was intentionally bad thing, but they were forcing themselves to laugh because, like, oh, sometimes you have to force yourself to laugh even when the world is coming to an end. I don't know that Josh missed that. I'm going to assume that he knows it because he knows it is a forced laugh, but I think that scene gets a bad rap. It's awkward, you know,
I don't know if it's so much awkward as it's creepy. Mm. And it's like, you know, the concept there is good. Okay, got it. Yeah, I see what you're doing. But then it's just the way it's executed is deeply, deeply disturbing.
Is this like audio Uncanny Valley?
A little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look up, just do a search for Final Fantasy X laugh. Not right now, but a little bit later on. It's a little bit like when Ray Liotta laughs. Like on the Flophouse, they had a great description. It's like what he does is he opens his mouth and holds his jaw fixed like a viper ready to strike, and then shoots laughter out through the open mouth like it's a cannon.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's a little much. Yeah.
So when I was young and naive, I didn't know Final Fantasy was the Japanese game, but that scene made a lot more sense after I realized that. Yeah.
Oh, just because of, like, translation awkwardness?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to go back and play that. I remember having a lot of fun, but that is, I think, one of the only Final Fantasies I've only played once.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, isn't there also, I remember this coming up on Bonfireside Chat, but, like, different types of laughs signify different character traits? Oftentimes in Japanese games,
that is it was a fact that was sent in by a listener that I've not been able to go back and find like which episode it was. And if I knew what episode it was, I would know which email to look for around what time. That is a thing. I believe that the version of the story goes that because Demon Souls and Dark Souls, like that series is done. It's dubbed in English, even over there, in order to communicate the kinds of characters that they were. They needed to give them distinctive laughs that were indicative of kind of like what they are, because, you know, a creepy laugh is going to be creepy no matter what language they're laughing
sure,
in.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
I don't know if that extends to like a cultural thing. I could see it. But again, I think creepy is creepy the world around. David, what's Carlos say?
Carlos says, not a game I played, but the love scenes in Ride to Hell Retribution are awful.
So I watched this video with the audio off when we were doing our warm-up. It is incredibly awkward 3D mannequin sex, but
it
they
is
are but,
terrifying.
they keep the clothes on.
Yes, they are fully clothed. It is fully clothed, obviously awkwardly mo-capped reverse cowgirl.
You should turn the audio on. You're in for a treat.
Oh, I don't know if I have the fortitude to do that. The creepiest thing about it, for some reason for me, is the teeth in the models. Just like, for some reason, you have the uncanny ability to see their teeth at all times, and it's
No, there's a little bit of angel quiz going on here.
There's a lot of good bass notes in the music being played, and
of course
scene.
There is.
Yeah. I mean, he said dismayed at the way his instrument was used.
that's up there.
I can't wait for that to show up on Abject Suffering. I know it's on the list a couple of times. Oh man, I love playing bad games. It's so fun. We did Daikatana as the premium episode this month. Let's see here, Ben. What does Gustavo say?
Gustavo says, browsing the anime tag on Steam. Oh boy.
So I have a little bit of a problem here, because you know, Steam's algorithm is gonna put some stuff in front of you, you know, and sometimes you're going to look at that out of curiosity, because there's no way this could be as awful as it looks from its cover image, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how about Sakura Swim Club?
Yeah, that's the one.
As bad as it looks.
Yeah. So that's the most recent one that kind of always pops up on mine. What I think is happening, or what I assumed was happening, was that because I clicked on one of those just to see how it is, that was giving me more of them, that I was expressing interest to Steam, saying, hey, give me more of these young anime girls. But no, I guess that's not the case if you're seeing them too, unless you do the same thing I do.
No, I literally just clicked on that. So Honey Pop looks especially fun.
Honey Pop is, my understanding, straight up pornographic.
Yeah, Honey. So the Steam version isn't. That is also that game is also made by Gators. So yeah, Gamergate people, and so yes, it is straight up pornographic. The Steam version is not, but if you get it from anywhere else, then it will be.
Yeah, I think we can safely skip 90% of this.
Which, granted, I'm a person who will play a visual novel. It's fine, but
see, I feel like considering how much of video games are made in Japan and, you know, the degree to which that aesthetic is kind of dominant, I feel like even having an anime tag seems kind of useless.
I know, right? I feel like that label is meant to indicate a certain kind of thing, and the certain kind of thing that it indicates is more that exact idea. So it's kind of like, you know, that Sonic Dreams collection that came out a little while. It's amazing. Play it. But how that just kind of embodies what the fandom did to Sonic. It's like it's more of a game about what Sonic is now, if you took the aggregate of all the internet. I feel like the anime tag is doing that for, you know, things from Japan, like these young girls in these compromising situations. This is, you know, just real unseemly. I know not all of it's that, but everything. And I've gotten in trouble for talking about anime, so I'm digging my own grave right here. But yeah, I think that's the only purpose it serves is to draw towards things like A Kiss for the Petals, Remembering How We Met.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, what does James say?
James says, Bayonetta, the move where the sexy angels are tortured on a spiked hobby horse. Cue close-up of their dirty pillows juggling. It's just wrong.
Yeah, some of the torture stuff is a little, like, I'm a Bayonetta defender, but the BDSM kind of stuff, which, fine, I'm not kink-shaming. I'm full of caveats today. It's a little, I'm there for people looking sexy and cool, not to see people get humiliated or hurt.
Yeah, it seems like, from what I've seen of that game, the intent is exploitative.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to, with that stuff fresh in mind, to disagree with you, even though I don't know.
Yeah, there can be redeeming qualities of some, you know. So
yeah,
I kind of, you know, after having played DMC and loved it so much, I kind of feel like I want to go back to Bayonetta just because it's like the closest cousin out there right now. And so we might at some point, if I go back to it, like I'm not beyond going back to it. I just remember not kind of bouncing off it pretty hard.
Yeah.
When I touched it the first time. So, you know, I might go back to it and we'll see how it stands up to the hype.
Yeah. I mean, if you get a Wii U, that'll be the way to do it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. I will pick up with Ollie, who writes in saying, I love Metal Gear Solid. Freaking love it. Was so excited when it came out that I read about it for months in magazines. To this day, it is one of my favorite games ever and a milestone in video game history. But man, you cannot defend the spying on Meryl scene from the air duct so that you can see her doing sit-ups in her underwear or the recognizing her by the shape of her butt and the sway of her hips. This is the game equivalent of a Porky's movie. The most embarrassing thing, I remember telling my friends how awesome it was. Oh, the folly of youth. Still, it's not as if you could hide inside a locker and stare at babes in bikinis in later games. Snake! Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Although I will say, you have to go up and down through the vents at least 3 times to see Meryl in her underwear, so you had to find it. It's not defensible that it's there, but you have to work for it.
It is kind of funny, the reflection on, like, you know, yeah, teenage me probably would have thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. And there's just a natural kind of piece of growing up that needs to happen that I don't know how much you can manufacture it versus just needs to happen over time.
I suppose. And, you know, like, I look at that and I have fond memories of it because I know that 13-year-old me is still in there. And it's like, you know what? I'm not really willing to throw away the part of me that felt good, or not felt good, but like that enjoyed that. Or, like, I don't know. It was the first time, like, telling her apart from all the other guards because of that. Like, yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's also a really cool gameplay mechanic that was only, like, made possible by the animation and stuff and the fact that they built it into the story.
Hmm.
I don't know. Here's me defending sexy games, which I never do.
defending a sexy mechanic in an overall not sexy game? I don't know.
It's a pretty sexy game. Have you seen Snake's Butt, man?
So I was actually wondering, I was recently, read an article, you know, discussing, I guess, some controversy in the most recent one, and then kind of doing a recap of, you know, some of these controversies in the previous ones. Mm-hmm. And I've not played any of the games, but I know, or at least my understanding is, the series is very much informed by, like, a lot of the Hollywood action, and particularly some of the, like, 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
Is any of kind of the random sex stuff, you know, justified by some of that in terms of, you know, it intentionally being like references to, you know, some of the excesses of those types of movies? Or does it ever come across like that? Or is it pretty much just kind of creepy?
It's really hard to tell. The line between those two things, between loving homage and just kind of period.
And also Kojima. Japanese culture.
Yeah, yeah. Or just sure. let's abstract Japanese culture from Japanese, the Japanese portrayals of sex that we see. Mm-hmm. You know, or at least their attitude towards sex that we get over here in the West. Like, I don't see very much in Metal Gear Solid that's kind of like more egregious than like a lot of the kind of exploitative, you know, TNA that you found in those movies back then. You don't see it too much today, but it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Not to excuse any of it, but I don't know that I agree. You know, that it is something peculiar to just the series. We can all stand to do better, but I will stand behind at least this as not being, again, it's not the worst, so therefore it's okay, which is a terrible thing. But
you'll stand behind. I see what you did there.
Because it's like sex. I get it.
Okay.
Let's see here, David. What does Kilo say?
Kilo says, "Remember all those binary morality systems a while ago? I went crazy for that shit, and now it seems so juvenile."
What is the dumbest, off the top of your head, the dumbest morality choice that you can think of from a game?
I mean, BioShock has to be up there. Do you harvest this young girl's juices, or do you wait to get the same reward a little bit later in the level? Like,
that's pretty good.
It's kind of like the marshmallow test, maybe, but it's like, are you willing to be traumatized by a marshmallow instead?
I mean, it's a real creepy marshmallow.
Yeah. I would say for like most blatantly trivial would have to be pretty much every morality thing in Infamous, except maybe the one near the end that's blatantly the only one that has any story impact.
Mm-hmm.
I would say for like most horrifying would, and this has come up several times, but is definitely Army of Two. Was it 30th day? Do you let a dude rape a chick or not?
Hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, that's too bad.
That's pretty cringeworthy. The one I was thinking of. Oh shit! I just lost it. One sec.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah, mine was from Infamous as well. It was literally he's like, "Bad guys have set up a bomb. I could defuse it, or I could walk away." Okay, cool.
Also for like trivial, but I feel like not really. The point is getting evil points for eating chicks in the original Fable.
Yeah. Well, isn't that that's a reference to an actual like delicacy thing, right? Like the orlaton or whatever it is, that bird that the French eat, they cook it alive. And they have to hide themselves under a napkin while they eat it to hide their shame from God.
So really? I thought it was just like the Monuk was some sort of crazy vegan or something.
Well, he does love chickens, as we've established.
Oh, that's what it. Wait, so yeah, so he loves chickens when they're young, but not. I'm so confused.
You get punished because you're taking chickens away from him.
Yeah, I know.
I thought we established they hated chickens.
It can go either way. Love and hate are not opposite.
See, I guess I figure what the actual description is that, you know, he actually hates chickens, but like everything else in all his games, he just can't deliver on that hate.
Oh, so it comes across as love.
Huh. Yeah.
I could see that. Let's see here. Who's next? Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, "Playing alone in the dark as a kid, my parents in the other room could only hear the loud, poorly voice acted moaning from the game's combat. Mm-hmm. Now I play video games with headphones on and my monitor facing away from the door and with every window covered."
Even still, as a grown ass man, those moans are funny. Because it's the exact same wave repeated over and over again.
That is funny.
Pretty good. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Franz says, "A lot of No More Heroes 2. The first one teetered on the edge, but never went over. The second went so far over the edge, it couldn't even be seen on the map anymore. Speaking of which, the seduction missions in Killer is Dead were just painful."
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes me less gung-ho. So I have Killer is Dead. I would like to play it because it is kind of touted as the heir apparent to Killer 7.
Mm-hmm.
But those seduction things seem a little bit,
I just love the your commander's opening monologue from the first mission is just amazing.
what is it?
It's something along the line of like, yeah, like someone comes to hire you because like his neighbor is like actually some like serial killer monster or something. It just says it's monologue. It's something along the lines of like, kids start disappearing in the night at the house next door to you, and you hear all these strange noises, and you start thinking, my neighbor might be a monster. Like, it's just like this, I can't even do it justice. It's just this like really bizarre, like melodramatic, like monologue.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's power through these last ones. Because we only have a little bit of time left here. Evan writes in saying, I cried at the end of every Yakuza game. They're campy as hell, but there's something about the respect for the main character the antagonist always acknowledges at the end that gets to me. See also the fist fight at the end of Metal Gear Solid 4. So this is a time when the awkwardness works for you.
Has anyone on this show played a Yakuza game?
I have.
You
played like one of the ones that was free recently, right?
Yeah, I didn't get real far, but that one overall was pretty good. I guess for cringeworthy, for me and that, there are a couple of things that I think were maybe like Japanese, like references to some of Japan's problems with like sexism that I couldn't tell if they were supposed to be jokes or not.
Oh, it was like the what is it, the hostess bar thing?
Well, and one of the side activities you can do, which is kind of what the game is famous for, is just being like kind of a much more gamey Shenmue from the sounds of it, almost in terms of just, you know, you can do stuff. So, like, one of them is a batting cage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, those are great.
Each of them have, like, some NPCs out front that are kind of talking about it, that's how they introduce, you know, here's the thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And, like, for the batting cage, there's a woman who comments that she likes to go there to blow off steam when her boss gets a little too grabby.
Mm.
It's like,
it's a weird joke if it's a joke.
Yeah.
Man, the Japanese don't come out of this episode looking very good at all, do they? Huh.
Sorry, Japan.
Send your hate mail to...
No, they're already sending it. Don't worry. I'm getting it. It's fine. let's see here.
Someone posted in the Slack as a potential question, like, what's the funniest piece of hate mail that you've gotten? And I was like, either Cole is, my first thought was, oh, man, I would love to be big enough to get hate mail. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I wonder how good a job Cole does from shielding us from all that.
I tend to pass good things along. Most of the good things about the show are posted in public. So, you know, it's out there and it's out there and you see it. All the things that come directly to me about how terrible we are, that's not your guys' problem. So
let it die.
I just imagine you getting a bunch of hate mail, opening it and reading it, having a single tear go down your eye and saying, I won't tell the guys.
I'll carry this with me forever. It's like the end of Miracle on 34th Street, except they bring in a bag and they open it up and it's just like a bunch of bats come flying out. Oh no, we got another bat. Bat bag.
Have there been any that have been just particularly funny or like off the wall?
Not for this show. There was a pretty fun one about somebody who, you know what, I'm not going to go into details. I don't know if they're going to be listening, and I don't want to give their point any credit. So,
Luce tells us, have you got any death threats yet?
No death threats, thankfully.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, that would
go. Send your death threats to Cole.
Jesus,
Ross.
No. If you send me a death threat, I'm going to send it to the police. Come on. Seriously, don't. I really don't want that to happen. Let's see here. Let's get through as many of these as we can.
Wait, hold on. What if I send you a death threat, Cole, but if it's just like one day everyone's going to die? Sign Ben Merkel.
Sign Ben Merkel, care of fate.
And Cole has his next postcard.
Can you just can you draw that on a Wacom tablet for me?
Did you just say a Wacom tablet?
Yeah, that's the name of those tablets that a bunch of artists use. Wacom or Wacom. It stands for Wacom the computer. Yeah. Sure. World computer. Whack 'em. Let's see here. David, what does David say?
David says, anytime a video game tries to do sexy. Story is fine and romance is fine, but sexy is always done terribly. It's either laugh-worthy or horribly offensive.
Yeah, see also the Ride to Hell Retribution one. And I'm going to take us into Amanda Cameron's. She writes in with what was going to be mine, actually, my answer, but she sums it up pretty well, too. The Simon sex scene in Indigo Prophecy, which was already gross and weird, but made worse by the fact that someone I was living with, but was essentially a subletter, walked in while said scene was happening. Yeah, ouch. That's bad. That is real bad. That was going to be my answer because, like, that's not just a like sex, which, you know, whatever, but like very poorly animated sex that was obviously trying to be like cinematic high art. Yeah.
Just like Ride to Hell Retribution.
I know, right? Well, you know, the we're not, you know, we can't be under any illusions. That brewery was owned by a rival gang and we're in for a fight. At least that's what the dialogue told me. And let's see here. Ben, let's round out with Chris Schley.
Chris says, the Penumbra and Amnesia games have that neat mouse control scheme that adds to the realism. Have to push and pull to open and close stuff. This isn't the fault of the game, but I usually get stuck humping a door and getting eaten by a monster because I'm panicking like a baby.
Yeah, and that system carries over into Soma.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. It's funny. I love going through those drawers and stuff. It's great.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. But, you know, it does lead to those moments where, because it is a digital abstraction, it looks like you're trying to escape from the triangle shirtwaist factory. let's see here. So, yeah, I've already said mine, that horrible Indigo Prophecy scene. So, Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine actually came from God Hand.
Oh.
Which, yeah, it's mostly mitigated by the fact that the game is supposed to be over the top and slapstick and whatever, but you can kind of do a special grab on every enemy type.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, and then you mash the button to deal a lot of damage. Well, the one for a particular female character is you bend her over your knee and spank her. Mm-hmm. And then eventually the final one, you just like rocket her to the other side of the room. Which again, it's, you know, it's all done very slapstick and as lighthearted as something like that can be. But every time my wife walked through the room, I seemed to get into that situation.
Yeah.
And it's like just the worst timing. And so she, like, the third time out, she's like, how much time in this game do you spend spanking people? Yeah. I was like, probably about 30 to 40%.
It's not just a particular female enemy. It's any enemy that is tagged as female in the game,
oh, yeah,
including,
sorry,
bosses.
Any. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, so that was entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sheer hilarity of like the timing. It was like, you know, summoning her to the room whenever that was going to happen.
Yeah. Just looking around, unpausing the game, pressing circle, and then like, "Hey honey, did you want some leftover?" What?
Yeah. And it's a really difficult win. So, you know, if you can take that shot, you're going to take it.
Yeah, no. It's going to pop up there, you know? Mm. Let's see here. David, how about you?
I don't know. This is kind of tough. I generally have no shame, but...
you sounded pretty uncomfortable about that Army of Two thing.
Yeah, I would say... Well, I would say the tough thing for me is, like, I can't think of, like, that many of situations where it's, like, actually been awkward or something. Like, mm-hmm. So I would have to say, like, pretty much all of God of War, probably Army of Two's pretty bad.
Mm. Well, God of War, I think it's Ascension. You just stirred
the PSP one. Yeah.
Sure.
No, is this, whatever the one that was on PlayStation Plus, it's whatever the newest one for.
Yeah, like it was Ascension, and that was the PSP one that was remade in the HD collection. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the guy is like, you know, fighting all these monsters and has them, you know, harassing him, the like boss creature, and he goes through door and suddenly he's in a harem full of topless women who want to have an orgy with him. And the thing that tips him off that it's an illusion is not any of that, but it's the fact that one of them is wearing a ring that one of the monsters was wearing. That was the tip off.
This sounds like a Jason Statham movie.
Yeah, basically. Huh. Oh, God. Sorry, I'd repressed that. That's also the puzzle. The puzzle where you like go and there's a pit that you can't jump out of. You go and solve this like really intricate puzzle. And then the way that that affects you being able to get out is you walk out and randomly just a piece of earth like earthquakes up and you can now get out. Completely unrelated to the puzzle. Yeah. Don't play that game.
But yeah, I can see God of War being pretty awkward because it's mostly a bunch of melodramatic screaming into the camera.
Yeah, and just I don't know. It's just so crazy immature.
Yeah.
Video games need to figure out sex stuff, man. We need to like to purge ourselves. We need to go through and list games that like do sex well.
I'm trying to think like I'm not sure I can think of
any.
I mean, obvious. I could say like Harvest Moon. You like raise a family,
where women are scorecards.
Or true. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll say Quantic Dream at least is trying. They're trying their best to try and make it like give it a mature look at it and not like a juvenile look at it.
Yeah. And you know, it's not saying much, but like Heavy Rain was a step up from Indigo Prophecy in terms of that. Like there was some gratuitous stuff, but like that, like the look and like the lighting and stuff, like the technology just wasn't there. And, you know, it's worth trying because that's a huge part of human experience that, you know, you generally want to have experience. You generally want to have reflected in art.
What is
or media at the very least, right?
Tale of Tales, I think, has done a couple games. I want to say it's Tale of Tales. What
the people who did like The Passage
Luxuria Superbia was their game that kind of took a very abstracted artistic view to it.
Well, I do feel like there. I don't know. I feel like one of the things that like. Maybe society needs to figure out or something is like how you handle, like, presumably there is a place for like just straight sexiness or, you know, appreciation of beauty, stuff like that, you know, being a thing, and kind of how you know, like where, you know, where the line for that is or what makes something or another, you know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody is saying, like, let's outlaw, you know,
I'm not saying that anyone
that's
is.
That's what I was saying.
I'm just more saying it seems like I tend to be, you know, maybe a little bit, you know, more, you know, willing to overlook, you know, some of that sort of stuff when video games screw it up, just because it seems like something that is so nuanced and poorly defined.
Yeah. I mean, what was it? Like a little while ago, we were talking about like, oh, like sex in games is weird, but it is a way to get to know a character better. Like the romance plot lines and stuff. Like,
it's interesting. Like, I feel like video games even still are trying to do surgery with a mallet. Right.
Yeah.
And they'll figure it out.
But there's like good stuff. Like if you play Passage by Jason Rohrer, like that's less about sex, but it's more about like, oh, you know, over the course of somebody's life, what does, you know, partnering up with somebody, you know, cost you and gain you, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that isn't as explicit.
There's a really cool interview with Quentin Tarantino where he was talking about what it would be like if in Forrest Gump they showed the sex scene between Forrest Gump and Jenny at the end of the movie, like how revealing that would be of his character. And I thought that was an interesting thought.
Yeah. I mean, if they, you know, if they had just not pulled any punch in that movie. Ben, how about you? Most awkward moment in a game?
So despite what I said about Quantic Dream, there's some really weird moments in, what's their third game?
Beyond Two Souls. Beyond?
Yeah. Not even necessarily having to do with sex, but just like whether you film people beating up a homeless person or not. It's like, yeah. Well, that's a weird thing to put in a game.
That's a strange decision. And it's like, it doesn't matter if, you know, they intended that to be the joke option that nobody would ever take, because God, why would you? Somebody still had to think about that and put it in an acceptable like space and then model it and write it out. And
consider... Someone spent time designing that.
Yeah.
I do feel like, though, that is, I think, part a lot of the genesis of a lot of the more like horrifying more choices and stuff like that, is the like, you know, what can we do to like have the person be a hero? Oh, well, he can, you know, prevent this awful thing. But, you know, and then like not quite deciding until it's too late in the development process and realizing, wait, that means the other moral choice is they let people do this horrible thing?
Well, no. If the moral choice is not to do a horrible thing, this was a while ago, but I'll tell the story as though it happened this morning. I was driving to work and I saw some coworkers from our admin team, and it was like, you know, kind of early in the morning. They were walking down the sidewalk, like away from the building. I had to go get some coffee or whatever. And I thought, you know what? I could be like right next to that. I could just like, as I'm passing them, I can just like pull over and like lay on the horn and just really like freak them out. Right. And it's like, you know what? Nope, I'm not going to do that. And I'll be damned if up until the point that I pulled into the parking lot and got out of the car, I didn't feel like I was just the most like just the most holy person on earth. I felt like I had done such an amazing thing by not mildly inconveniencing and startling these friends, these coworkers of mine, who I hold in really high esteem. Like, I would never want to like, you know, do anything bad to them. But like, I felt good about not doing that bad thing. That's what a lot of like...
The Louis C.K. bit about, you know, thinking about, you know, allowing someone in the military to upgrade to first class in your place, and like feeling really good for having those thoughts, even if you don't actually do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Beyond Two Souls, especially like the Native American chapter.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's just real weird.
Did that HD remake come out?
Don't know.
Oh, well. That bird I was thinking of before was the Ortolan, not the Orlaton. I transpose the two syllables, and for that I am deeply sorry.
We'll decide your penance later.
Yes, we'll add death. That to the tab. We're gonna boil you alive in brandy. What did I ever do to brandy? Let's see here. Thank you so much, everybody, for writing in. We really appreciate it. Check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Tuesdays for when Dennis usually puts those out so kindly.
And can I cover real quick the sub multiplayer that went on real?
Sure, I guess.
Just as the topic of candy corn came up, I don't know if candy corn will actually make it in the episode. I forget if that was on air or in the between.
No, I'm going to leave it in because it was really funny.
Yeah. So I posted a quick survey about how people feel about cotton candy, and people came out in force.
Cotton candy like controversial?
Or sorry, candy corn.
Candy okay. corn.
Candy.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, geez. Yeah.
Excuse me. I entered it correctly. So this is legitimately on candy corn. And yeah, it's I don't know how controversial it is, but not held in very good regard. So of the options of love it, meh, and hate it, 7 chose hate it, 7 chose meh, and a lonely 1 standing at the top of the pile chose love it.
David.
So. No, I abstained from the vote, by which I mean Facebook doesn't work well enough for me to probably see it anyways.
So I'll give you a chance to defend yourself. You're obviously opting to eat candy corn. What draws you to it?
I like candy corn.
is it the texture? Is it the sweetness? Those are the two things I can think of about candy. The shape.
I think some of the shape. Like flavor. I know. I just liked like I don't know. Like I think as a kid, it maybe the fact that like, oh, it's corn, but it's candy. You know, was real little.
Okay.
I like the. Honey flavoring, like not that many you know, candies and stuff like that really do like the honey type of sweetness as opposed to just like straight sugar type of taste. particularly also because like I generally don't like pastries and stuff like that, which are usually where you have like a honey sort of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And I do kind of like the texture.
Okay. So. No, I'm down. Like I like execrable candy too. Like I love a candy cigarette. And I also like conversation hearts. Like I like sweet chalk.
See, it's funny because like those are the two things that like I really love conversation hearts and I really love candy corn to the point where like I will not like big time like crazy person, but I'll a little bit stock up after the you know, once it goes on sale at the end of the season.
You know what's the shit that's in that kind of wheelhouse is those butter mints. Have you guys had those?
Oh, like at weddings?
Yeah. Oh, those are so good.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down with the butter mint.
I talked about random candy a lot more than I thought I was going to today. If you had asked me at the beginning of the day, Dennis, how much is candy corn going to factor into your day? I would probably have been like, it's not much.
Son, it's not even October. Yeah.
This episode brought to you by candy corn.
Yes, the consortium for candy corn.
No, this episode brought to you by candy corn flavored cotton candy.
The CCC, the candy corn consortium.
Big candy corn.
Yeah.
I just picture it being the size of a Buick. Guys, we have spent way too much time on this topic.
Oh, sorry, everyone, including to myself.
Wait, seriously, pancakes.
The grind.
It is now time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. I'm going to throw it to you, Dennis, because you have been away the longest.
Yes, and I have the coolest stuff that I've played.
Cool.
Don't want to bury the lead here. I'm legitimately excited about the stuff I get to talk about today, because I found two really good games that are just kind of stuff I went after on a whim, and that turned out really well. So the first one I referenced earlier in the episode, which is Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc, which I borrowed from you.
Yeah.
Not stole, borrowed.
Yes.
I'm turning over a new leaf.
It was a transaction.
Yes.
Everyone was sober.
Everyone was sober, kinda. At least on a relative scale. Yeah. So it's kind of a narrative, a novel game, kind of in the vein of Nine Hours, Nine Doors. Yes, just in the right order.
All those words. It wasn't the right order, but you had all the right words. So I'm going to give it to you.
It's a novel game with a lot of visuals.
Yeah. Or Zero Escape Virtue's Last Reward, which is the one that I'm familiar with.
Yes.
But kind of, it almost feels like, you know, in that genre of people trapped in a place and watching how things unfold with some sort of murderous intent mixed in there. Which I wanted to ask, does 999 have like a cartoon character that is evil in it?
No, it does not. But you're well aware that Virtue's Last Reward does.
Yes.
So wait, do you mean literally a cartoon character that's evil or a character that's cartoonishly evil?
So Danganronpa has Monokuma, who is a black and white mechanical bear, whereas Virtue's Last Reward has 03, who is a kind of like picture Saw's ventriloquist dummy, except it's a rabbit. That is done up like it's like a cartoon version of a porcelain Chinese rabbit doll.
Yeah. So both, they're going for like kind of creepy slash wacky character. It's just a really interesting niche or device to drive along that kind of stands out for both the games.
Yeah.
But you know, it works, and it's like, this is the genre of game that it is almost. And so I can endorse that fully.
Yeah.
But in Danganronpa, you are, a high school student who has been, chosen to go to Hope's Peak Academy, which is known for being the ultimate school, by which I mean that the ultimate something, or everyone who goes there is the ultimate something.
Yeah.
And so you've got like the ultimate baseball star and the ultimate novelist. And Cole, I remember you mentioning like there's also the ultimate fanfic writer, and that's different than the ultimate writer. And that, you know, there's all that good stuff going on there. But you know, basically what it sets up is a bunch of strong personalities.
Yeah.
And you, most of this, you're kind of mashing the X button and reading the little bits of text that go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the main way that you, and basically all these people are trapped in the school, and told that the only way they can get out is to kill someone and get away with it.
Yeah. And there's like a whole trial system built around it.
Exactly. And that's where I was going, is the kind of gameplay piece of this is you get to these class trials after someone is killed, and you have to kind of interact with or click on the different students' phrases as they talk through what happened to like find the incongruities or find the mistakes or the untruths and fire quote unquote truth bullets, which you collect during during the story phase to kind of disprove the things that they're saying. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's kind of, it's
so
it's
you're
weird.
Pointing out all of their hollow points.
Yes.
Wow.
I love it.
See, if I said that, you'd boo me.
I would. I totally would.
It feels very random to have the gunplay kind of theme to that part of the game. It just it feels random to be there, but
they literally just made a third person shooter out of that mechanic.
Yeah, it's just what's an interesting way that we could do like clicking on these that's more than just tapping on a piece of text that's static. Yeah.
I love how in a game that's all about murder, the gunplay has nothing to do with it.
Completely true. That leads me to the one thing that I'll complain about, and I'll complain about, and then I'll get into gushing over this game because I'm really enjoying it so far. But one of the mechanics as you're doing that is there's white noise that floats across the screen, which is just these like random phrases that are supposed to be like, you know, your head is spinning, you can't focus. And so you have to get those out of the way before you fire your truth bullet. But really, you almost kind of have to trial and error, learn where they are. And it almost always resulted in me missing on the first time. Oh, go ahead.
Have you finished the game?
I have not finished the game.
You do not have to specifically tap on where they are. You can just hit the back.
Oh, really?
You can just hit the back panel as opposed to trying to aim over top of them.
Oh, that's great to know. Yeah, okay, good.
And also, it's not like your head spinning. It's literally crosstalk from the other students. So, like, all of these sections are meant to be everybody shouting over top of each other.
Oh, and I thought it was, like, in your own head.
No, it's them modeling, like what this real-time debate would be.
Interesting. Okay. Well, then I forgive it a little bit more.
Yeah, but like it may not be that you can just tap anywhere, but it's like far less precise than if
I shied away from the back panel because I thought I would have to be precise with it.
Nope.
If you can just tap to get them out of the way, then great. Yeah. That solves it right there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you know that gameplay piece of it is interesting, and but that's not really what you're there for. You're there for the story, and like I said, it's a group filled with strong personalities, and it's a lot of fun to watch how those play out. It's also a lot more free form, so there is a lot more control than there was in Virtue's Last Reward, which is again my point of reference, because you do have periods of time where you can kind of free form walk around the school and examine things and kind of have freedom over where you go next. Whereas in Virtue's Last Reward, it felt like you weren't on rails, but you were always advancing towards some specific goal.
Yeah.
Can you murder people?
No.
No, unfortunately not. Not yet, is what I'll say, because I haven't finished it. Cole, for your reference, I've gotten through the second class trial, and I'm in the investigation phase for the third.
Okay. Yeah. You're about halfway through.
Yeah. Which makes sense given the number of students.
How many students are there?
There are 15.
Huh.
And the funny thing, again, I don't want to tread too much ground that Cole has mentioned in previous episodes, but it's really funny. You are the ultimate lucky student, by which I mean that there's absolutely nothing interesting about you. Your name was just chosen from a huge list of every high school student.
Yeah.
That's how they deemed you the lucky one, which is really funny.
See, I feel like the logical solution would be like whoever's the ultimate mechanic student just organize a trap to kill everyone else, and then no one can possibly pin anything on you.
But the rule is, again, it's really interesting because they've thought through every way you could abuse the system.
Yeah.
And so the rule is that you can only kill up to two people to get out. So you can you don't have to kill just one. You can kill two, but if you kill another, then you get killed yourself.
Yeah, like there's nothing stopping you from getting around the system, which they don't want you to do because the system is everything.
Yeah, and the they is very unclear to me so far, which, you know, it hadn't really, I didn't finish Virtue's Last Reward, which is, this is making me want to go back and finish it.
which so you should, I think, it's a really good game.
Yeah, and do they ever, like, very clearly spell out who the bad guy was and who did what?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's, because I remember...
In Virtue's Last Reward or Danganronpa?
In either.
Yes, for Virtue's Last...
It's fine. So what I will say is I will be, you know, I'm interested to see if that's revealed here. Yeah. And I know there's Danganronpa too, so who knows what. They do a very, very, very good job at kind of giving you just little hints of, hey, there's something a lot more complicated than what you realize going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Like, there's just random things that are out of place, or, you know, one random interaction with Monokuma and then he's gone and you're like, okay, that, hold on, there's something really wrong about what he was saying. And then, you know, the action moves you forward. You don't have enough time to really process it. They do that really well. Or, like, you know, in the latest piece I played, the group had kind of split up and you're kind of running back and forth between the groups. So you're trying to, like, keep two timelines straight in your head at once. And then, but at the same time, all these different things are happening. It just, they do an incredibly good job of setting these mysteries up.
I love that trial. That one's so good.
Oh yeah. And I think that's of the two murder trials that I've kind of gotten through, I've been very impressed at how they write the mysteries, because they never, it's not like they were withholding something completely from you that you could have never figured out in advance. Like, as I reflected on, okay, here's who actually did it, and I kind of realized that in the process each time, it was like, okay, there's one thing that person said that was out of place. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just discounted it at the time because I don't know why. But now I can see that there is that level of intention behind everything, where that, you know, if I had been paying enough attention, maybe I couldn't have exactly pinned it on, you know, the person that ultimately did it.
Yeah.
But I could have had, you know, I could have pieced it together to some extent that so-and-so was, you know, not on the up and up or something like that.
It speaks to how well they define the characters, that they can get you to dismiss direct clues as quirk.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And the characters are very strong. There are some of, the other kind of gamey mechanic is, after you can choose who you spend time with, and then you can give them a present to, you know, make your relationship with them better.
It's a little dating semi.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's kind of a game of trying to figure out who would like what present. So there's kind of that piece is a lot of fun. Kind of toying around with, okay, you know, oh, I learned this, they mentioned this, so I bet they would like that item or what have you. Mm-hmm. And I forget where I was going with that. It's just a fun little mini game.
Yeah.
I've messed it up on a couple of occasions where I gave them something and they kind of didn't like it. I'm not going to, like, go back and reload my save for fear of that totally screwing up. I'm sure there's a min-maxing version where, like, if you max out everyone's relationship before they get killed, I don't know, you get a trophy or something.
The trick is that you never really know. You never really know when somebody's going to die.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so, like, you don't want to miss a chance with somebody who you really wanted to learn more from, because, again, like, that is something the story has decided before you even get in there. So it does feel like, you know, there are certain people that you just have not as many chances to, like, get an opportunity to know.
Well, I almost think that I'm starting to, like, realize that and gain that a little bit, because it's like the people who have the super obvious, like, likes and dislikes, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, maybe I should pay attention to them because they might not be around for so much longer. Because, like, it's the people who have gone so far, well, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, in my interpretation of it, have had very obvious likes and dislikes.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the other characters are much more mysterious or hard to kind of figure out or pin down.
That first death is a gut punch, right?
It is, yeah. No, absolutely. But again, in retrospect, as I kind of walked back through everything in my mind, it's like, you know what? That was kind of weird that they were acting that way.
Yeah.
That really was not explained satisfactorily. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I kind of maybe dismissed it as video games at the time, but you can't do that with this game. Like, it is really, really well written.
Yeah. See, like, I'm upset because I like Danganronpa too. Like, it has its problems, especially compared to, I think the first one is definitely the strongest in there, but it's like, oh, you know, I bought it digitally, so I can't loan it to you. So you're going to have to buy it.
Yeah.
If you want
That's, you know, it's probably like what, $10, $20?
It'll be like closer to like 30.
Oh, if it's close to the level of this one, even.
Yeah.
It'll be a good purchase. Again, that assumes that I keep my Steam and I go through this, which I need to do because I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, but I'm happy you like it. Like, you know, I hate it when I make a recommendation and it falls flat. Like, I've done that to other people and it's been like, well, I'm sorry I made you waste your time. But
yeah, no, I think this has been a very enjoyable experience and I'll continue with it.
Yeah, if you've gotten this far, you're definitely like going to get over the hump with it.
Like, yeah, I'm invested.
Yeah.
Although I was invested in Virtue's Last Reward, it was just the weird like memory card switching thing that got off my plate. So that was more a function of hardware crap than anything else. Wasn't anything with the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's Danganronpa. And then the other thing I've been playing is a game called Dead Core.
Yeah, I've seen you posting about this.
Okay. Oh my gosh, so good. So this is, I don't even know how recently it was out. So I don't know if it's particularly new or it was particularly notable. I went through a very brief phase where I was convinced that like the gun ballet, like platforming centric speed runny first person shooter was going to be like the next big thing. Mm-hmm. And I just added a bunch of those types of games, and by which a bunch of those, I mean, two of those to my wish list. Dead Core was one of them. And literally I was just searching for like speed run or something on Steam.
Yeah.
And it popped up on sale for like $2. So I couldn't not. And man, I'm glad I jumped on this. Like it is just what I described. So it's a first person shooter that's very focused on platforming, to the point that your gun is called a switch gun and its only utility is to turn on and off switches from a distance. So, it's got some other utility
that works
on,
with real guns, but only once
and only off.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. So, but the setting is really striking. So you are climbing a tower. Or you're always trying to move up. But the tower, like a tower doesn't do it justice. It's this, think of it like a tower, like exploded, you know, into one of those diagrams where like every little piece of it is kind of pulled apart and floating in midair. That's what this looks like. And it's just kind of floating in this cloudy middle of nowhere air. Like you start, it's floating. All these different pieces are floating and just kind of vaguely near each other. So it's not really a cohesive structure so much as it is like all these objects and platforms kind of in orbit.
I mean, it looks like the challenge maps from Mirror's Edge a little bit, except with more like atmosphere.
Exactly. Yeah. And it feels really cool because from the beginning of the game, you're essentially like jumping over the vast void below you. And it feels really cool to go to that first like section of the game where you feel really angsty every time you make a jump, to watching your skills progress to where you're in the later levels and you're just like flying through all these like gravity inversions and turning on a switch midair and then immediately dashing to another platform without even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So the ramp of increasing your skills feels really good. There's like a very vague hinted at story. You pick it up in logs that you then have to go into the menu to read. So, very clearly not the focus, but it's there. The music is another thing that I like. So it's like the perfect speedrunning music, I guess. Like it's like a hyperactive drum machine with kind of some like synth effects below it. Hmm. So very minimalistic, but when that kicks in,
like driving, right?
Yeah, like driving, and it starts out kind of ambient, and then we'll kind of the drums will get more and more into it, and when that kicks in right as you're like doing something really cool really fast, it just feels great.
Is it responsive or is that just coincidence?
I can't tell. It's happened often enough that I would guess that it is, but you can also unlock the tracks to like listen to. Which makes me think that they're fixed. So I think it's that the natural, you know, the music has that natural ramp to it, and then you're just doing cool shit often enough in the game that it kicks in at the right moment. So yeah, it's kind of very platforming focused. You've got a double jump, you've got a dash, and then you can kind of rocket jump eventually. Mm. So you unlock skills, but you can like charge a shot and then fire it into a wall to kind of boost yourself up. And that's, you know, it's just a really, really solid mechanical experience throughout. And I've enjoyed it a lot. I've finished the main game once. Something tells me if I can get through it fast enough, there might be extra stuff. Like they're literally, yeah, the other function of your gun is it literally has a running clock on it from the moment you start to the moment you finish.
Oh, wow. They know how to motivate you.
Yeah. That's how speedrun focused it is. And so you're watching that clock tick up the entire time. And I kind of wonder if I finish the game fast enough, if there won't be extra stuff available at the end.
And so this has to be designed like bespoke courses, right? This isn't randomly generated at all.
No, it's completely bespoke.
Okay,
And it is very well designed from the perspective of, you know, my first time through it, I was very much just trying to survive, trying to figure out the puzzle. It was all, you know, it was very challenging throughout. Then I went back to kind of pick up the collectibles because then they in addition to the main game, they have discrete speedrun obstacle courses that you can unlock. And so I went through and unlocked all those and kind of just looked up a video that showed where the pickups were and then kind of warped to the nearest checkpoint, went and got it. And my ability to get through the level so much faster and more gracefully that second time through was night and day.
Nice.
So it was just, the game is all about just feeling better, feeling good about how much your skills are progressing. And it does that really well.
So how was it to stream? Like, did people respond to it?
That's how I found out that my internet quality was really shitty
at home.
Cincinnati. So yeah. I mean, people said it was fun to watch. Provided that my stream was good.
Yeah.
And I've got one,
like a first person thing refreshes a lot more, like a lot more keyframes exactly. than that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that is what is holding me back. I've gone as far as to like check my competitors. Time Warner has the best internet available. And then it's like the level I'm at right now, I have 15 down and one up.
Oh, that's...
Which is, yeah, abysmal.
See, the problem is what really matters is latency, not download speed.
Yeah.
Really?
But I mean, like, specifically for streaming, though, you want to have at least more, like, at least five up.
Right. And yeah. So I can get five up, but I have to pay $20 extra a month for, I think it's like 30 down. And I don't have any qualms with my download speed. It's yeah. fine. Stream high def video. And
no, that's so, yeah, that's inexcusable.
I would pay like, I don't know, $5 extra a month, maybe even $10 extra a month for five up. I just, you know, they're freaking robots on the other end of the phone.
Yeah, so. No, but then what you have to do, and this is bordering on life hack territory, but I've gotten purchase out of this, call mm-hmm. them and say I'm going to quit, like I don't want to do this anymore, mm-hmm. and then they will give you a better price.
Yeah,
you know, so. Like I know that, like, I mean, if you're like me, I hate conflict, but like I took my brother's advice on that and it worked for me, so
yeah.
I've had cool. I've had one friend who though said that he tried that and they're like, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Well, like, no, wait. Here's the trick. Do it towards the end of the month. Like tomorrow so would be an amazing day tomorrow. To do it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But whether or not I'm able to stream in the future, and I hope I am, the game just feels good to play, which is really cool.
Do we know anything about like the development history behind this or who made it? Is this just like a crazy successful Unity thing or?
Let me see. I don't know how to get back to it in the store once I've purchased it. I've got to search for it. So it was published by Namco Bandai.
Hmm.
Yeah. So go figure on that one. And it's a bit weird to see that logo pop up. It's like the Dark Souls logo popping up the time I open this game. 5-bit games are the people who developed it. And I don't know what they've done notably before.
It's not like they don't need a pedigree for me to like respect them or anything.
But, no, yeah. Yeah. But it is an award-winning game. So
nice.
It's been recognized as very good at what it does.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that I found it because, you know, again, it was kind of like just a brief, oh, this is going to be an interesting type of game. I should add a couple of these to my wish list. And then, it paid off in a really unexpected, nice way for me.
Yeah, I had no idea what this was until I saw you tooting about streaming it. So, yeah. Fantastic, man.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything else to say about it except look for it on streaming in the future.
Cool. Let's see here. I imagine, Ben, you and I are going to have kind of the same thing, so I want to give David a chance to go.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I actually, the main thing I've been doing is I picked up the new expansion for Destiny.
Oh, the Taken King.
Yes, yes. Although it came with both of their previous downloadable content, so I completely forget what they're called. It's the House of Wolves, and like, is it Dark Blow or something?
It's the something of something.
Yeah. And I hadn't played any of those previously. So actually, where I'm at in the game is I'm about to. I have one more mission to be in House of Wolves, which is the second one of them. So I haven't actually started the Taken King yet.
Okay. Oh wow. So you have to like progress through everything to get to the new content.
You don't have to. You have to be, I think, level 25 to start the Taken King. And like I was at level 24 before I bought the expansion.
Okay. Oh, so you just had a couple of extra things.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more just like that's vaguely the order the story goes in.
Okay.
Although both of the downloadable contents are kind of side stories. The Dark Blow is kind of the events that lead up to the Taken King. But okay.
So it summons Nathan Fillion.
Yes. basically that one is there's some woman named like it's like Eris Morn or something who basically went up against this like evil monster dude and like all of her squad got killed off and she spent years hiding in the tunnels of the moon, and she's just kind of creepy overall.
Okay.
But she's kind of the local prophet of doom that enlists you to take out this this monster that killed all her friends.
Okay.
And I actually, one of the things I like about this story is, it is legitimately like, you're preventing this, great evil from being summoned and, that sort of thing. But you're also kind of help here with her hit list.
Well, it's a game. I mean, you're going to kill people. I mean, obviously.
Right, but
There's no other option. Come on. Let's be serious.
Right, but I'm just saying more like the way it's written, like it's sort of like yeah, you definitely are fighting the good fight and defeating evil. But this is also a chick who like has a grudge with a lot of these people and is kind of just like having you kill them off.
Yeah, it's a personal vendetta that you're helping to settle. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that you're
kind
of caught up in.
So, overall, I know, like, I wouldn't say anything too earth-shattering. I think, I've read a lot of good things about what they've done with the Taken King, but I feel like this, the expansions are still kind of, them kind of getting their feet under them.
Yeah. Well, they've got, what, 8 more years to get this right?
Right, exactly. And there are some good things. They have implemented a explicit quest system.
They didn't have that before?
No. I mean, before they had the I guess I should say like for the most part nothing has changed, but whereas before it's basically just as you played through the game, you beat one level and one mission and then the next mission unlocked. Now there's actually like an explicit quest log.
Hmm.
And then they've also added like there's a quest for your subclass that is kind of you you know being sent on various tasks by your by the leader of your class in order to kind of learn the ropes and stuff like that. Mm. And also the I'm playing a Titan, so the leader of my class is what's the actor's name? The guy who plays the police chief in The Wire.
Terry Crews.
No.
sorry, I'm thinking of a Newsroom. Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Some show that acknowledges the police.
David was talking, Terry Crews came to mind, and that's the name I said.
Huh. I forget who you're referring to.
I don't know, but I would say it is kind of weird, like, after I really liked him in Fringe and what I've seen of The Wire, but it's now kind of weird hearing his voice come from like a space robot dude.
Oh yeah.
I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name in The Wire, nor do I know his actor's name.
Yeah.
So that's really good. They've also they have kind of a quote for both the start and completion of each quest in the quest log. And it seems like they're trying to kind of make the writing a little more interesting.
Okay.
A number of them are just, you know, kind of silly or funny, or just, you know, the various characters, you know, kind of doing their, you know, slightly offbeat commentary.
Okay.
So it does seem like they're definitely putting in some effort.
Yeah.
I don't know. Overall, I'm really enjoying it. I still really like the combat. I really like the three weapon system. In terms of, you know, having your primary, your sidearm, and then your heavy weapon.
Yeah. Of course, he's made choices, right?
Well, and I'd say more than that. Like a lot of games do that. You know, like Call of Duty does that. But what I like is, you know, there's routinely times where, you know, I'll be, you know, on the fly in the middle of a gunfight, you know, like, you know, grabbing my shotgun to, you know, drop an enemy, and then, you know, immediately switching back to, you know, my primary weapon to, you know, engage, you know, smaller enemies, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Side note, is it Cedric Daniels from The Wire? Lieutenant Daniels?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, the kind of the taller guy. Yep.
Lance Reddick is the actor name.
Yes, that's who it is. Yes, all Reddick. Right. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah, so and the voice acting continues to be good. I did go back and play one of the early missions just to see what it was like with Nolan Northbot instead of Dinklebot.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, his voice for that's interesting just because, like, he doesn't really sound like Nolan North.
He's not trying to, right?
Well, yeah, no, obviously, like, explicitly he is not trying to, because he's not playing that same sort of character he's kind of associated with. But it's just weird, you know. It seems like there's some voice actors that it's like usually like their voice acting tends to be their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is very obviously not.
Yeah.
Which I think is kinda cool. But mm-hmm. at least so far I feel like the writing's just a little bit too boring to really make much good use of it.
From what I've heard, it actually gets better in Taken King. Like they're taking steps. So, like, you know, I'd be curious to hear you confirm that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's interesting. I'm excited. I think the game actually, you know, for being like everyone criticizing the writing and stuff, I actually like a lot of the writing of some of the incidental characters.
Mm-hmm.
I really like they kind of do the sci-fi trope where like if a robot or artificial intelligence is around for a long time, gaining experiences, it'll eventually develop a personality.
Yeah.
And so the like local like mail clerk bot has has developed a personality, and so just every time you walk back past it, it's just like freaking out about various about some warlock sent a package that promptly disappeared or something like that.
And nobody is concerned about their apparent sentience.
Yeah. Well, and then the other one I really like is the weapon dealer is one of the exo races with robot people. So, there's no life expectancy. So he's, supposed to be like hundreds of years old. And so one of his character traits is basically has so many like experiences from all those years that he's kind of, from just kind of running out of places to put them all, has sort of developed robot dementia.
Huh.
And just, yeah. And so there's a number of things where it's like, maybe not fleshed out, but it's like, oh, that's kind of a cool concept. That's kind of an interesting idea.
Well, those small bits of charm can, make up for a lot of sins on the macro scale.
Right. Right. So,
Yeah,
so I'm excited. So far, I'm really liking it.
Oh, cool. Neat. Well, I'll be excited to hear what you think when you get to the new content proper. Everybody, we have a lot of people at work are excited about it. So, yeah, I'm going to move on. Ben, I'm going to throw it to you because I imagine that we have both been playing the same game just like last week.
Or 2 weeks ago, yes.
Oh, yeah.
time flies. So I'll do one random one, and then I'll do one which will lead into yours. So the random one, and this isn't exactly a video game, because it's not, but I played Risk Legacy this last week. Have you guys heard of this at all?
I really want to play this so bad.
Now, what is this?
It's a board game, and so it's the newest version of Risk that's come out. The main difference of it over previous versions is the first 15 games that you play will shape how the map and the races that you play as like turn out. So there's a lot of like video game mechanics built into the board game. So like at the start of the game, you have like six different classes that you can choose when you're playing.
The first games or like the first turns?
The first 15 games.
Yeah.
Really?
Has anyone ever actually played even a single full game of Risk?
I imagine Ben's going to get there. It's super easy to do with Risk Legacy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So the way it works is on the board, there's 15 different spots. So each time you win a game, you sign it so that it kind of keeps track of who's won each game and how many games that they've won. That'll come up later. But each person chooses a race. And I think at the beginning of the game, you do it based on die rolling. Whoever has the highest die roll gets to pick the race first. And so with each race, they'll each have a special ability. Like one might be if you're attacking and you roll three of the same die and you beat the other player, you automatically win the entire battle and you can invade their country. And then there's one that's kind of the opposite of that. If you're defense and you roll two sixes, they cannot attack you for the rest of the turn in that spot. So there's like upgrades like that for each ability. And then like as the game progresses, there's like achievements on the game board. So when you open the board, there's a bunch of things that are wrapped in like white packaging and it'll say, open this when you've done this. And it'll have some sort of condition that you can open it with.
Oh my gosh. It's a DVD made by Fred Willard.
So for example, there's things called missiles that you can get later on in the game. When you use three of them in a single battle, you can unlock this one certain deck or certain ability. So different races will be unlocked as you play the game. Different upgrades to the board will be unlocked as you play the game through this thing called Scar Cards, which are basically different modifications to different countries.
Yeah.
So, for example, there's one of them's called a bunker, where if you place it on a country, the defense gets plus one added to their roll. So if they're just rolling a single die, it's very hard to take over that country.
Yeah. So you're like Scar Cards, like you're literally making a lasting impression on the earth. Like this is like legacy is like, what does each conflict or like extended round of conflicts do to the actual like kind of like topography of the world?
Yeah. So I should have mentioned this. As soon as you place these on the map, you're placing a sticker down on the board. So when you do this, it's permanent. So for every game after that, that same sticker will be there. So you have to think kind of carefully about where you're going to place each thing.
And is this forever you own the game, or is like, are there multiple games being played in a night?
It's forever when you own the game. After the first 15 games, even if you haven't unlocked anything, the game board is set. So after the 15 games, that is the risk board, and you're only playing with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's only a certain number of permutations, but the idea is that most Risk Legacy boards will end up being different. So it's a way to, like, literally physically codify house rules as defined by the way the game designers wanted house rules to evolve.
Yeah. It's really great because it's self-balancing. So, like, if a certain country, like Australia, is too powerful, it can be diminished in power throughout the course of the game. So whoever wins a game, in addition to signing the board, they get one upgrade that they can make to the map at the end of the game. Likewise, even if you've just survived in the game, you like didn't die, then you can make one modification to the game. Hmm. But it'll be a minor modification, not a major modification.
Yeah.
And one of the differences to the original game is when you not every country will be filled in at the beginning of the game. You just place your troops on one country and you expand from there. And expanding is just moving your troops over. If there's like a city there, it might cost a troop to move into that space. But so there's not as much conflict. It's more, I'm going to just take over this country. You're going to just take over that country and we'll see what happens. But then modifications can be made to continent bonuses as well, based on if you win the game. And then different races will come out eventually if you complete different objectives. So,
Yeah. And so like what I was referring to is like, oh, has anybody ever finished a game of Risk? Like they actually like victory conditions are really constrained. To a certain extent, it's not total world domination. So you don't end up with like, you know, somebody fighting over Madagascar or something like that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the victory condition is you need 4 stars, quote unquote. Everyone starts the game with 1 star on the first game. Owning a base gives you another star. So everybody starts off with their home base. So everybody starts off with 2 stars, essentially. So they only need to get 2 more. So they only need to take over 2 more people. Mm-hmm. Or there are other ways to get stars. If you trade in 4 reinforcement cards, you can turn that in for a star. Hmm. So if somebody doesn't even trade in reinforcements, it could last 8 turns because they could just get that many cards and then trade in.
Yeah.
So it is quicker. But then after you've won a game, you no longer get a star at the beginning of the game. You get a missile instead. What a missile does is it allows you to change a single die. You do not even need to be involved in the battle, but it allows you to change a single die of either the attacker to the defense. So, for example, you could change an attacker so that their 6 is now a 1, and that could cause bad things to happen, or you could go to the defense and change their 1 into a 6 and it's an automatic kill, you know.
So you sabotage people.
Yeah.
Huh.
You can.
This is crazy. So after 15 games, like, are you done? Do you throw it away or can you keep on playing? The game board just stops evolving.
You keep on playing, but it stops evolving. The game board is fixed after 15 games.
Yeah.
So I implore you not to look up what the upgrades are, because so much of the fun of the game is trying to unlock the different pieces and then being surprised at how it changes the game.
I see there is one that says, do not open ever.
I don't think that's true. Really?
I'm seeing multiple Google images of it.
Oh. It's just like an ink packet, like they put in bags of money from the bank.
I am not aware of that. So I don't know. Maybe it's like Pandora's box.
Although, if you think about it, yo, I think we're up to, yo, the world has had at least 15 wars. So that means no matter what we do now, we can't wreck up the place anymore, any worse than we already have.
Yeah.
Party.
ROCK in the USA. Yeah. That's pretty good. Oh man. Very yeah. Cool. I would love to play this game because I like Risk. I think that it falls into the Monopoly problem, just that the base game is just terrible and interminable.
And it goes on too long.
Yeah. So I'm happy to hear, because like I've heard about this from like our buddies over at Video Games Hot Dog and other sources, and so I'm happy you got a chance to like play it. Like this is gonna sound like a trick question, but between regular Risk and this, which is more fun?
This one definitely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like no comparison. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. So,
this has definitely been one of the most interesting games I've played in the last year as far as board games, just because I've never seen a game like that where it changes from game to game and the rules evolve with the plays.
Yeah.
So that's a completely new feature. So that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing I've been playing is Metal Gear Solid 5.
Nice.
I haven't really dug too far into it. I'd say I've maybe beaten maybe about 20 missions now.
Okay.
So I'm up from, I think I was at maybe 8 or 9 the last time.
Yeah, you're like a 5 or 6, something like that.
Okay. So I think I texted you, I'm totally on board with the Maneater soundtrack.
Thank you. I'm really lobbying hard for that. Like, there are some people who are saying, take on me, which is like, you know, I can see it. Like, I understand the instinct, but come on, Maneater.
The thing I like about Maneater is I never really listened to that song before this game. Like, I knew it existed. But I never, you know, felt the urge to listen to that song. But writing it on a chopper and hearing that is quite entertaining.
Well, it's got that bass line. It's got that dun 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 dun. Like, it's got that, you feel it over the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I've progressed far enough that I've been able to evolve the bass. Mm-hmm. And I've also not playing the game, but I've seen somebody else play the game who's already beaten both parts of it. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the evolution endpoint of the base. So that's interesting.
Yep.
But I won't say too much about it. Yeah. So I look forward to continuing to play through the game.
So, I mean, like, can you talk about any highlights that you've had so far, like in terms of like moments of play? Like little mechanical niceties that you didn't expect in the stealth, or just kind of the way the systems are interacting. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, like it's really open ended, like in a very satisfying way.
Sure. There was one mission where I figured out how to use. There is a tank in the game that you can use.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there are multiple.
Yes.
You have them dropped in.
Yeah. Figuring out how to use that was very satisfying in the mission that I learned how to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice.
And I've gotten the second buddy, whomever that may be.
I mean, the fact that you referred to them as a person kind of indicates who they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
Okay.
My second buddy might not be your second buddy.
Okay.
But yeah.
Hmm.
I'll just say eye patch.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. So you said whomever, and I didn't expect to be referring to a creature.
Well, I might not be.
You make it so hard to talk about video games.
I know. Anyway, I'm enjoying it so far, though.
Yeah.
So yeah, but Cole,
so when
you have beaten this game.
Yes, I have. At least, you know, like I haven't 100%ed it. Like I'm probably like 46%. So sue me if you tell me that I have not seen the true Metal Gear Solid. I've beaten chapter 1 and 2.
Okay.
And chapter 1 is a full game. Like it took me 50 hours to beat. Mm-hmm. And chapter 1 is probably my goatee this year.
Okay.
Like, it's so good, and it's so, like tightly scripted, or tightly plotted is not the right word, because it does have that, you know, kind of open world, free roam kind of feel to it. Like, it doesn't move, you know, in great strides, and not every mission is really as impactful as you would like it to be, but it draws to a really satisfying conclusion. Okay. Chapter 2 is the second disc of Chrono Cross.
Okay.
How so?
Oh, just insofar as, like, it's a whole bunch of, like, disparate, very cool narrative things that are separated by a bunch of bullshit play. There are literally tens of instances of credits in this game. So, like, if I say you reach credits and then there's more after it, that doesn't mean anything. But, like, you'll play a full game and then you'll get to a point where it's like, well, we're still here, and there's still, like, main story stuff happening, and we're, like, getting conclusions to certain characters' story arcs, which is perfectly fine and good. However, I would really rather those just be little missions you can play, like, at will. However, the way it presents them to you is these are happenings that occur back at Mother Base that only trigger after you do either side ops or kind of enhanced versions of missions you already cleared in the main game.
Okay.
So it's either, like, subsistence versions where you drop in without any of your loadout stuff, so you have to procure all of your weapons and items on site, or it's like extreme stealth where you fail if you get seen once, or extreme where there are more enemies or tougher enemies, or, like, these are specifically, like, boss fight kind of things. And it's asking you to do stuff that you had done before, which I don't care how good your mechanic was. If I don't want to go back and see it, I don't want to go back and see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I really enjoyed going and seeing all this new stuff because, you know, by the end I cared about these characters, or if I didn't care about them in some certain instances, I wanted to see what their ultimate fate was and how that connected to other stuff in the series. But yeah, like, chapter 2 is a real mess.
Okay.
That's too bad.
You know,
I'll be sure to not look forward to that.
Well, I mean, the trick is you just get there and you recognize, oh, I don't have to do the stuff it's saying as main missions to trigger this stuff. I just need to go, like, do the, like, crazy weapon hunt kind of stuff, or the, like, the animal hunt kind of things, in order to, like, trigger these, because it's like one or two regular missions or side ops to get those to trigger. So the chapter 2 can either last, like, 50 hours or 15. So yeah, but, like, what they're asking you to do doesn't get any less fun. And I can see a version of the world where, like, going back and playing a harder version of those previous missions would be really satisfying. At that point, like, I'd had enough Metal Gear.
Yeah.
You know,
so it,
like,
outstayed its welcome, do you think?
A little bit, yeah. Like, it told a really good story in chapter 1. And I could just kind of tell, like, it's weird to say this, I kind of wished it was 2 games. Or, you know, 3 with Ground Zeroes or whatever, yeah. You know? Like, you know, they had enough of that. And there was, you know, there was a third chapter they had planned, which I really like the concept they laid out for that. But, like, you know, I'd rather that be something that came out, like, 6 months from now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough because I really wish that I could compartmentalize it and say, like, oh, I ended this with the bang that chapter 1 ended on, and then it was left it wide open, and it wouldn't have answered a lot of the questions that I had about the series, you know, rather than what it ultimately did, which was kind of become a Kojima game with a bunch of filler in between, which is a little bit of a bummer. And it's sad because there's so many, like nice little mechanical touches. The fact that the outposts respond to the way that you've been playing, especially in chapter 2, it, you know, bears fruit. Like, you don't really notice it too much with with chapter 1. You don't go back to the same place too many times. But if you go through an outpost without being seen and accomplish your mission, the next time you come back, there are going to be cameras. Or if you go through killing everybody, just willy-nilly, the next time you come back, everybody's going to have body armor head to toe.
That makes me think of, you know, the Batman Mr. Freeze boss fight where kind of you figure out a way to hurt him once and then he kind of nullifies that.
Yeah.
That feels like that kind of ethos.
Uh-huh. But you can sabotage that. This is like a little bit of alpha protocol alongside it, which is you can run combat deployments, which is you've been building up this base and getting this combat team assembled, right? You can actually send them out to sabotage certain parts of enemy armaments. So like if you never want to deal with your people or with your enemies having helmets, you can just constantly be disrupting their helmet shipments. Huh. But it's just like a regular tax on these deployment things that otherwise could be getting you the currency of the game.
Pay to win.
Well, I haven't seen a path to turn regular cash into the in-game currency. Like I know that you can get like mother base coins. Well, I guess that is, but like you pay real money to get extra forward operating bases, which in turn can get you more in-game currency. So it's really abstracted. So it's kind of pay to win, but I like the idea of an enemy force that kind of evolves to meet you. It's a little bit Dishonored, yeah. You know?
That's very cool.
Have you noticed the enemy is kind of rising to meet you, Ben?
Nope.
Okay. It'll happen. I hope I didn't spoil anything for you, but
No. That's fine. I have seen, I think one other case is if you snipe a lot, they'll put up dummies.
Mm-hmm. No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, these hilarious. It's literally like the autopilot from Airplane.
Does that impact your ability to snipe in any way?
Well, I mean, you just have to pay more attention to whether or not they're moving.
That's too cool.
Yeah. Like, I love this game so much. Like, it's so good. I really wish that they had a chance to finish it, I guess.
Hmm.
Haven't they said this is supposedly the last one in the series?
They said that about 4.
Well, I mean, Kojima wanted to quit after 4, but due to the direction that company is taking and the fact that Kojima no longer has a relationship with them, like, we've got what we've got.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's sad, but I'm satisfied with I'm satisfied with the high points of what's there. I just wish it did not outstay its welcome, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I guess that's all we've been playing. Like, I really finished that up. I know, Dennis, you lent me Tearaway, which I meant to play several nights, but I ended up falling asleep because I played my PSP in bed.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's. I'm in no hurry to get that back. So.
Yeah. It's a short game, so I'm really curious to check that out.
If you're ever just feeling down and you want to feel happy, play that game.
Okay. It's in the PSP. Like, it's right here. Yeah.
That's the Danganronpa was only the second game that I've ever had a physical cartridge for on the Vita.
Nice. Yeah, and while we were talking, I ordered the third one, the side story, the shooter one. So,
the side shooter Tearaway?
No, Danganronpa.
Oh, okay.
The Ultra Despair Girls one.
Oh, I wasn't aware that existed.
Yeah, literally, it is a third person shooter where you shoot truth bullets.
Huh. Yeah. Cool.
Cool. Well, did you have any other thoughts about Metal Gear Solid V, Ben?
I think that's about it. I will keep playing it, and I will confirm or deny your assessment of the game.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I hope I didn't color your perception of it. I trust you to draw your own conclusion, but like, I'm really tolerant of that kind of stuff, generally in games. So I'll be curious to hear what you think. Do you all want to button it up?
Let us button.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to level number 122 as we look at this here. Here in a couple weeks, I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon for the Portland Retro Games Expo as we talk about Castlevania during our live show there.
Is
we're going to have a booth set
again?
Up. What's that?
Is that back around again?
You know what? I thought the same thing.
Castlevania?
Holy crap.
You're right. No, it's like I said, off mic, or in the green room or whatever, however we refer to it on this show. this year got away from me. So
yeah, no doubt.
But
away from me too.
Check out the Watch Out for Fireballs social channels, for those things. Gary and Brayton and Nick and I are going to be hanging out, for that stuff there. So I'm looking forward to that. And also, in early November, there's going to be some stuff here in Ohio around the Ohio Game Developers Expo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yes, it is. I had no idea until they invited us to talk about Dark Souls there. So those things will be pinned down as we approach this, but we are coming up on a fun season and I encourage everybody to come along. But for this show specifically, thank you everybody for responding to the multiplayer prompts. You can see those at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, along with notifications of when the individuals on the show stream. If you want to check out the Slack group that we refer to, that is at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And then the usual iTunes ratings and reviews. Fellas, is there anything that I forgot?
No, thanks to everyone who writes in. It's really cool to have so many people participate in the show.
For sure.
Yes. Even if you are wrong about candy corn.
Nice. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith at Moneysmith777 on the Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around to hear us talk about the title. Does anybody have a title they want to suggest?
Candy Corn Sucks.
That's not so much a title. That's not something we said. That is just... It's just amusing.
Overt provocation.
Yeah. of somebody who's like on the call with us.
You know.
Oh, any others?
I actually don't hate candy corn. It's just that I slightly dislike it, and this has just pushed me over the edge.
Podcast polarize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. So I'll read you the ones that I have. At least he has beans. Forbidden corn. Care of fate. That's C/O:fate. Sweet chalk. CCC. Which I'm not going to include this in the title, but would stand for Candy Corn Consortium.
We get a lot out of that candy corn bit.
I know, right? Or only off. So I'm a fan of forbidden corn. I'm not going to bias the results by saying that, but that is that's where I stand.
Wait, I do want one out of that conversation.
Yeah, I do want one out of the candy corn conversation.
Okay.
So what are there were three of them, right?
Okay. There is
CCC.
Forbidden corn and sweet chalk and CCC.
Yeah, I feel like
either CCC or forbidden corn.
Okay, forbidden corn it has to be. Ben, do you have any?
What about big candy corn?
What?
Candy corn.
Lobbying their way.
I do kind of like big candy corn.
That might be a little bit on the nose, I think. I think that it might be just a little bit too direct.
Okay.
Is my opinion.
I like forbidden corn.
Okay.
I like at least he has beans.
I don't even remember what that was in reference to.
Person going into a fallout shelter.
Scared
because of the Twitter.
As a side note, can you ever get beans in Fallout?
No, it's mostly like instant mashed potatoes and shit. Which is a strange product to market. Instant mashed potatoes and shit.